Morning. Today's daf in Chulin Pei Tes. We're on Pei Ches Amud Beis. We are at the bottom of the Amud Amar Rava. We get treated to a little bit of a Agadata. We're at the end of the sixth parak of the Masechta. We spoke in this parak about the halachas of Kisu Adam. And so at the end, the Gemara gives us a little bit of a Agadata. The parak ends off with some halacha. And then this morning, we're going to start off the seventh parak of the Masechta, Gid Anasha. Let's begin. Amarav is Bishash Amarav Ramavinu Anochi Alfar Ve'efer. Avram, the merit of Avram, saying that I am just but dirt and ashes. Zoch ben al shtei mitzvos. So his sons were beneficiaries of two mitzvos. Now, the truth of the matter is that we know that the mitzvos were going to be given to us regardless of whether he said Anochi Alfar Ve'efer or he did not say Alfar Ve'efer, and it's difficult to entertain even on a hashkafic level that it's only because of this event that we received an additional two mitzvos. So what's going to become very clear as we go through this piece of Agadah, the next one as well, is that the mitzvos in general are meant for us to be observant and just simply observe the laws of the melech. Rarely do we have mitzvos that actually provide tangible benefit for us. So what we're learning together now is that because of the actions of Avraham Avinu, so mitzvos were created, a certain number of mitzvos were created and provided, in which we're actually going to be receiving benefit from these mitzvos. So you'll see as we go through these examples. So his kids got two mitzvos, Efer, Parva, Afer, Sota. So of course, playing on the words of Anochi, Afer, Ve'efer. So two mitzvos that are related to dirt and ashes. So ashes is easy, that's Paraduma, and Efer is Efer, Sota. Now both of them having Hana'a, so they're both pretty straightforward and easy to describe. When it comes to the paraduma, so before you get sprinkled with the paraduma, before doing the mitzvah paraduma, so you're in a state of tuma and you are precluded. You can't go to the base of mikdash, you can't eat karbanos, and now that you get sprinkled with the paraduma, so now you can enjoy and appreciate these activities of going to the base of mikdash and eating karbanos. Afer sota, the dirt for the sota, the solution of dirt and water that's drunk by the sota, so the benefits are obvious, assuming that nothing happened in that room and that she was not with that man. So then she's going to have shalom bayis with her husband. She's going to have a child. And so there are benefits. V'lichshuv nami offer kisu adam. So the Gemara says, now why don't we also take under consideration the offer for kisu adam? Isn't there a benefit from the offer of kisu adam? And the Gemara's answer is, no, there's not. No, when it comes to kisu adam, there's a hechsher mitzvah. Interesting language the Gemara is using right now to describe the mitzvah of kisu adam, but there's no hana. There's no hana. If you look at the bottom Rashi over here, Rashi spells it out. Hana leka b'mitzvah zu de'balav kisui nami havei mishtari basar. As we all pointed out, but here Rashi says it as clearly as one could want. Rashi says that without kisui adam, of course you're allowed to eat the meat. Kisui adam is not going to prevent you, withhold you from eating the meat. Aval be'efer parayika hana. But when it comes to these other mitzvahs, as we already went over, but, you know, I got it from Rashi. These other mitzvahs, so there's a real tangible benefit. Kisu Adam, there's no actual benefit. You can eat the meat even without the Kisu Adam. V'amarava, we are on the bottom line of Peches Amud Beis. B'schosh amarava mavinu im michut v'atzroch na'al, zach banav l'shtei mitzvos. Avram Avinu is an assistant with a war he did not want to get involved in, but then they took his nephew. And that, of course, changed everything. Avram Avinu not only got into the war, but it was instrumental in the victory of the war and in terms of the spoils of the war. So he told the king of Sodom, you know what? Let me take nothing. I'll take nothing for myself. I won't take a strap. I won't take a shoelace. Nothing. So as a result of that, Zachu Banu L'Shtei Mitzvos Zachush Shel Tchel V'Ritzuah Shel Tfilin. So by rejecting even the smallest of these items, turned into mitzvos, and again, the same idea. Mitzvos that not only are we in compliance with, but mitzvos that also provide us a benefit as well. And so for the chut shel tchelis, which is the mitzvah, of course, of tzitzis, and the ritzuah shel tefillin, self-evident, that's the mitzvah of tefillin, so there is benefit. What benefit are there from these particular mitzvos? So bishlam ritzuah shel tefillin, ksivaru kol amei haaretz, kishem Hashem nikra elecha. So as far as tefillin is concerned, the Gemara says, I have no problem explaining that. You see, by tefillin, the Torah describes that the Ame Haaretz, the nations of the world, are going to see that Shem Hashem is on you. V'tanya Rabbi Eliezer Gadol Omer Eilu Tefillin Shel Barosh. And this is a reference not to just anything, but obviously Tefillin Shel Barosh. Shem Hashem is on Tefillin Shel Barosh. You have the Shin on the Tefillin Shel Barosh, and then in terms of the rest of Shem Hashem, so the knots of the Tefillin, the Dalet on the back of the head, and the Yud on the arm. So and what's the benefit? The benefit is that the nations of the world are going to see you, and they're all going to go running and hiding. So the tefillin creates a certain amount of independence, intimidation, and it helps us against our enemies. What about the tzitzis? So what's the benefit of tzitzis? So the Tanya. So it's a Gemara that we're all familiar with, but it's really interesting how the Gemara goes into the context of our discussion. Rabbi Meir Omer Manishan Tchelis Mikol Hatsiv Onim. Why Tchelis? Why exactly is it the mitzvah in the Torah to take a one of the strings of the tzitzis, or maybe two, or maybe half? Right, I covered all the shitas. So why is it a mitzvah in the Torah to take a string of the tzitzis and to color it Tchelis, which is presumably blue? By the way, there's a Rashi and Chumash that makes it sound a little more blackish. But anyway, so Mikol Hatsivonim and Mishat Tchelis Damal Yam. Because the tchelis is similar to the ocean, v'yam dam le'rakia, which is similar to the heaven, v'rakia odam le'evens up here, which is similar in color to the sapphire, v'evens up here, dam le'kisei ha'kavod, which is similar in coloration to the kisei ha'kavod, d'chsi v'ayiru asa lokei Yisrael, v'sachas raglav. So the Torah in the end of Parshas Mishpatim gives some description of a vision of the kisei ha'kavod, u'ksiv kamari evens up here, demus kisei. And the Pasuk in Yecheskel says that the coloration of the Kisei HaKavod is similar to that of the sapphire, which is similar to the Rakia, which I'm working now backwards, which is similar to the Rakia, which is similar to the ocean, which is similar to the color of the Tcheles of the Chilazon that comes from the ocean. The probably the most frequently asked question is, why do we have all these steps in the middle? Why can't we just go straight to the sapphire, which we know what it looks like, to the Kisei HaKavod? I've heard numerous answers, but... Sorry for not cheering right now, but in the context of our Gemara, so it really begs understanding. Our Gemara says that from this episode, from this memra of Rav Meir, so therefore it provides for us a tangible benefit. So what exactly is a tangible benefit that the Gemara here is making reference to? So again, the tefillin is there for the purposes of scaring our enemies away. That's a tangible benefit. So what about the tzitzis? A reminder, okay. So Rashi over here, really interesting Rashi. Rashi over here writes, Dam Aliyam, Sheh Tchelis Dam Aliyam. I'm just going to jump to the end of the Rashi. And Rashi writes, U Kisha HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mistakel B'Kisei HaKavasholo. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at his throne, Nizkar B'Mitzvah Zu, Shekenegah Kol HaMitzvos. It reminds the HaKadosh Baruch Hu of this particular mitzvah, which corresponds to all the mitzvahs of the Torah. So basically, the Rashi is telling us is that what benefit does it have? So it gives us a very special relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as if he needs a reminder. As if. We all understand the basic issue with the Rashi and what makes Rashi so interesting. As if HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs a reminder, he looks at his throne and he says, oh yeah, the mitzvah of tzitzis, that's right. And it's corresponding to all the other mitzvahs in the Torah. And so it creates a super special relationship between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, it's a little bit harder to explain than the other tangible benefits that we went over so far and the other examples, right? The scaring away our enemies, the Afar Sota, the Afar the Paraduma. So it's easier to explain in terms of tangible benefits. Here it's harder to explain, and certainly a very interesting Rashi that comes alongside it. Continuing in the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Abba Kashukas al Necho Shafil Tzadikim Gemur Menechom Lach Zero. You know, once stolen items become consumed, it's really difficult. It's a real challenge. Especially when it comes to food, but even any stolen item that becomes now a consumed item, so even tzaddikim gemurim are going to have difficulty replacing it. What does this line have to do with anything we're discussing? So we're going back to Avraham and the war. So what did Avraham do when spoils of war were offered to him? So he declined. No, thank you. But then, of course, Avraham didn't fight alone. There were others with him. Now, when they say others, by the way, right, everyone's familiar with the Rashi. Others meant Eliezer. But the Torah describes how he had 318 men that accompanied him. And Avram said to Melech Sodom, you know, except for that which my soldiers already ate, I'm going to take nothing. So in other words, what Avram Avinu wanted to do was really return everything, but his soldiers ate already, and he just simply couldn't return it. Shenemar biladai rak asher achlana arim. And the Gemara now quotes from the episode. And Avram says, look, I really don't want anything. The only thing I'm going to ask for is that which my soldiers already ate. The difficulty of returning things which were stolen. And interesting over here, what the Gemara is assuming is that in the course of this particular war, and whatever Melech Sdom arrived as spoils is not considered rightfully theirs. And that's why Avram declined it. And Rashi, by the way, on the top of the Amud, makes his point even clearer. If you go back to the Rashi on the very top of the Amud, Rashi writes, "Imichud v'atzroch shelo ratza lehanos min hagezel." Avram did not want to get benefit from any of the stolen goods, and that's why he declined all the spoils of war, because he felt that they were illegitimately acquired. Now, it's really interesting, normally in the course of war, so there is something called spoils, and generally speaking, we take from the spoils, right? I can point to a couple places in the Torah where, and Nevi'im, but you know, you can go far back as the Torah, and you can point to places in the Torah where we went to war and we took back the spoils, right? Our war against Midian. So why over here was Stom's acquiring of the spoils considered illegitimate? That's also a wonderful question. I don't have a prepared answer, but it's clear from the Gemara that that's the Gemara sentiment regarding the spoils and why Avram declined it. I'm Rav Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon Kol Makom Shatam Motzei Dvarav Shel Rabbi Elazar Bino Shel Rav Yosei Aglili Ba'agada Asdei Asdecha Ke'apar Cheses. Whenever you hear the words of Rabbi Elazar Bino Shel Rav Yosei Aglili as it relates to Agadata, so your ear should be like a funnel, meaning listen and listen carefully. Lo Mirubchem Mikol Amim Chashak Hashem Bachem. The Torah, in the beginning, towards the beginning of Sefer Devarim, explains to us that it's not because of our multitudes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a desire for us. Now, in terms of the actual numbers of the Jewish people, so even though the simple reading of the Torah over here is that it has to do with our actual numbers in terms of our population, but now the Gemara is understanding this B'derech HaGadata that it's not referring to that, but rather, Amar Lama HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael Chushkani Bachem. Kadosh Baruch Hu says to us, I love you, Shafila b'shashani mashpil lachem gedula, because even when I make you great, atem ma'atim atzmechem lefanai, you still make yourself small to me, meaning you don't let power get to your head. Asati gedula la'avram amar lefanav anochi afar ve'efer. Avram was a great man, and materialistically, he was a great man, and he was given tremendous gedula. And meanwhile, Avram comfortably said, Anochi Afar Ve'efer, I'm just but dirt and ashes. Moshe and Aaron says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, V'nachnu Ma. And what are we? L'davin Amar V'nochi Tolas. V'lo Ish, Davin HaMelech, also, king of the Jewish people, says that basically I'm a worm. I'm not a man. Aval Ovdei Kochavim Eino Kim. Now when it comes to the Ovdei Kochavim, so their power does in fact get to their head. So for Nimrod, so he said, okay, now that I'm all this powerful Nimrod, so let's build a tower and let's make a war against the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Paro Amar Miyashem. Paro, when asked to let the Jewish people go, and Moshe says, and oh, by the way, Hashem sent me, so Paro says, Miyashem. Okay, it was God, meaning there's me. And L'Sanchev Amar Mi Bechol Elohei Aratzos. And Sancheriv says, and what other forces, what other powers, what other gods are as great as I am? Ula Nebuchadnezzar Amar Ela Bamasei Av. And as far as Nebuchadnezzar is concerned, he says that I went and ascended above Bamasei Av. L'chira Melchsor Amar Moshav Elokim Yashavti B'lev Yamim. I sat where God himself was situated. So all these great leaders historically of the world all felt felt power and felt that they were in fact greater than others, and in some cases greater than God. So once again, now we're going back to the pasuk of Lo Merubichem. It's not because of your, and now we're understanding it the way that Rabbi Lazar Ben Osher of Yossi Aglili understood it. It's not because of you think you were great. In other words, it's not a question of numbers and population. It's the way we feel about ourselves and conduct ourselves when we find ourselves in positions of power. Amar Rav Vitim Rav Yochan Gadol Shenemar B'Moshe V'Aron Yoser Mimashenemar B'Avraham. What was said regarding Moshe and his humility was that greater than that of Avraham. Dilo B'Avraham Ksiv Anochi Afar Ve'Efer. You see, by Avraham, so as low as he felt as he was, but he still compared himself to something. Granted, dirt and ashes, but something. Vila by Moshe Aaron Ksinachnuma. Meanwhile, by Moshe and Aaron, it says Venachnuma. We're nothing. Nothing. So everything, of course, over here being relative, meaning we're not taking anything away from Avraham, just relatively speaking, by comparing Avraham to Moshe and Aaron. So Moshe and Aaron exemplified even more humility. The world sustains based on the zchuyos of Moshe and Aaron. So as we've now quoted already numerous times, so their statement of what are we? The Pasuk of Niyov says, you know how Kadosh Baruch Hu suspends the world? He suspends it on bilima. Now the simple translation is he suspends it on nothing, meaning Kadosh Baruch Hu is able to have the world hanging on nothing, not even a thread. But the Gemara's play on the words over here in terms of the Agadita's concern is tola eretz al bilima, that the world is suspended on the zchuyos of the ma, meaning nachnu ma, meaning on the zchuyos of Moshe Rabbeinu. Amar Rabbi Elai, olam eskayim ale b'shvil mi shebo lemes atzma b'sham b'riva. Rabbi Elai says that the world is sustaining itself based on the people who are silent during a time of squabbling and fighting. So generally speaking, what happens during a fight is voices are raised, and the loudest person wins. And the tendencies. But meanwhile, however, if a person is quiet during a fight and just simply accepts, absorbs, and doesn't feel the need to retaliate or answer back, the world suspends itself on that. Shenema tola eretz al bilima. And Rashi over here explains that the word bilima in this context, in this drasha, comes from the word bolem. Rashi explains soger es piv, somebody who closes his mouth at a time of argument and fight. Rabbi Abba Amar Megeshamim, I'm sorry, Mishama Shemaim Atzmu Kamish, sorry, let me try that a third time. I'm going to get it right. I have confidence. Just not the first try. Rabbi Abba Amar Mishama Shemaim Atzmu Kamish She'eno, somebody who puts himself as if he is not there. Shenema Mitachas Zro'os Olam, Umitachas, and from underneath, Zro'os Olam. Those are the arms that are really holding up the world. The person who basically humbles himself and doesn't put himself front and center. Amar Yitzchak Ma'idichsev. The pasuk ha'umnam ilaim tzadik tidaber meisharim tishpatu b'nei adam. Pasuk from Tehillim 58th perek describes that the craftsman ilaim tzadik tidaber meisharim tishpatu b'nei adam, and the Gemara goes on to describe ma'umnaso shel adam ba'olam hazeh. What should be the craftsmanship of us in this world? And the Gemara here is not talking in terms of profession. The Gemara is talking about behavior, characteristic. Yasim atzmo ki ilaim. A person should make himself like a silent, like a mute. Meaning, speak, but seldomly. And in the context of our Gemara, especially when you feel the need to defend yourself, so that's the perfect time to be quiet. Yachol af l'divrei Torah. Now, in terms of, generally speaking, being quiet, so that's wonderful. Does that include even in Torah conversations? Tamalam tzedek tedaberun. No. When it comes to Torah, so then you should be vocal and you should speak. Yachol yagista ato. Now, let's say you have amassed a certain amount of Torah knowledge. So it's a great opportunity now to be arrogant. Isn't that right? And to which the Gemara now continues darshing the pasuk. Tamalam meisharim tishpatu b'nei adam. No, you should be mishur. You should be flat, even if you know a lot of Torah. So, like the Mishnah Pirkei Avos says, that's why you're here. You're here to learn a lot of Torah. That's your job. You did a good job. You don't need to fist pump after having done what you were supposed to do. I know it runs so counter our general day and age. But anyway, ancient wisdom. Amar Rabbi Zira v'itemer Rava Bar Yirmiya mechasim ba'afir enidachas. Okay, as promised. We are now concluded the agadic portion of today's daf, and just a little bit to go until we finish the end of the sixth parak, and we end with divrei halacha. We know that there are certain dirt that is aser bahana. Now it's interesting to get to dirt that's aser bahana, meaning dirt's dirt, it doesn't have value, but nevertheless there are certain times and occasion where dirt's going to be aser nana. And the basic question that we're going to be dealing with over the remaining part of the sixth parak of the Masechta is that if I have dirt that's aser bahana, so am I allowed to use it for the mitzvah of Kisui Hadam? Now, perhaps everyone in this room right now is thinking to themselves, well, that's a mitzvah, and any benefit that I get from a mitzvah is discounted. It's just simply not, it's not considered. Mitzvos lav lahenos nitnu is the classic refrain of the Gemara. And it's going to be the refrain coming up in just a moment. So, but that, interestingly though, that won't be the Gemara's first answer to the question or to the halacha. So let's start again. Amar b'zi'ir v'itema rava bar yirmiya mechasim ba'afar ir anidachas. One is allowed to cover the dirt using the dirt of the ir anidachas. So again, let's review. The dirt of the ir anidachas, what happened? A city in Eretz Yisrael is Ovid Avodah Zarah, and we did the math and we found out that the majority of the members of the city were actually Ovid Avodah Zarah. So for the people who are Ovid Avodah Zarah themselves, even though the normal punishment for Avodah Zarah is going to be skila, so for the members of the Yer Nidachas, so it's still capital punishment for Ovid Avodah Zarah, but it drops down to Herek, decapitation. Furthermore, all the possessions of everyone in the city, by the way, parenthetical note, those people in the city who are not Ovid Avodah Zarah are not going to be executed. Okay. Then, all the possessions in the city of everyone in the city is collected into the center of the city and burnt in the center of the city. And so what you have now is this major destruction of all properties in that city. What about the dirt that was collected as well? So the dirt that's collected as well, we're not talking about dirt now that's on the ground, but in other words, people have, I don't know, various dirts in their house, whatever the case is, that dirt also is going to be having a status of Ir Nidachas. And when we say dirt, by the way, we can also include even the ashes after all the possessions were dirt. We learned in yesterday's daf that as far as the mitzvah of Kisra Adam is concerned, ashes are an interchangeable item. Even if those ashes are ashes of any item that was burnt, we gave an example yesterday of burning an article of clothing, those ashes can also be used for the mitzvah of Kisra Adam. So if I have now the dirt, and I'll add also now ashes of the Ir Nidachas, even though they are Aser Behana'a, I can use them for the mitzvah of Kisra Adam. V'amai Yisra Anahu, so the Gemara asked the question, well, how? Isn't the very definition of Yisra Anah means I can't get benefit from it? And as a result of that, that would mean that by definition, I am now not going to be able to use it for a mitzvah because that's getting a benefit. So Amazir lo nitzrucha ela la'afar afra dechziv es kol shlatik boats el toch rechova visarafta. So the first answer of the Gemara is we're not talking about the possessions that were collected and burnt, but rather we're talking about afar afra. We're actually talking about the grounds of the city of the Ir Nidachas. The only thing that has the status of that which needs to be collected is only anything that can be picked up and moved. But if I need to dig it up, so that does not have the status of Ir Nidachas, and that does not need to be taken and burnt, and consequently, that is not Aser Behana. Mishena Mechusa, the Gemara Darshans, Mishena Mechusa, Ela Kavitza V'Sreifa. The only things that are subject to being collected is anything which is, you just simply need to pick up and collect. Yatzazusha Mechusa, Talisha Kavitza V'Sarfa. If anything's actually planted in the ground, or certainly the ground itself, which you need to dig, that does not have the requirement of that which needs to be collected in the Ir Nidachas, and therefore not subject to the Isra Anah. That's answer number one. Not the answer we would have guessed, or certainly I could speak on behalf of myself, not the answer I would have suggested the Gemara said. That's answer number one. Rava Amar Mitzvah Slav Lahenes Nitnu. And here we get to the answer that is a little more popular, right, recounted more often in the Gemara, and that is the general rule that mitzvahs are not there for our benefit. Look at Rashi over here. Rashi is articulates it. Rashi says, Rava Amar, Afilu ba'afra afra nami mutar. Shikisu adam. Now, Rashi over here has the words afra afra, right? That's right. Probably that Rashi needs to be corrected. Not my guesswork. The Shita corrects the Rashi, right? Ba'afra sreifa saw. Even the ashes that were reduced in the center of the town that was burnt. So nami mutar. Shikisu adam mitzvah. V'lo hana'a. So Kisra Adam is a mitzvah, and there is no benefit. Sha mitzvah shenasnu liYisrael lo lehanos nisnu lahem. All the mitzvahs that were given for us are not towards our benefit. Now, I got to be very clear about how we present this. And I'm speaking about myself. I have to be very clear about how I present it. What do you mean it's not to our benefit? Obviously, mitzvahs are there for us to get schar. Schar v'onish is a fundamental piece of emunah that we have. But when we say benefit, we mean tangible benefit in this world. Lo lehanos nitnu lehem, lo l'shem hana'a nitnu lehem, el gzeras melechi aleihem. It is just simply gzeras melech. Why do I do that mitzvah? And the answer is very simple. Because Hashem told me to do that, and therefore as an Eved Hashem, so therefore I do it. It's really that simple. And so all the Tamei HaMitzvot, all the wonderful lessons to be learned from all the mitzvot, all very nice, not just nice, have value, there's a point to be learned, but when it comes to distilled, boiled down, I do mitzvahs because the Kadosh Baruch Hu tells me, and there is no physical benefit that comes to this world. It's so interesting, by the way, because at the beginning of today's daf, the Gemara went over, there are certain mitzvahs that provide for us certain tangible benefits. That's true, but that's not the function of mitzvahs. That's not the purpose of a mitzvah. The purpose of a mitzvah, of why I do it, is because the Kadosh Baruch Hu told me to do it. There are going to be some external benefits that are coming from the mitzvahs, but that's not the function, that's not the purpose of mitzvahs. So that means to say now that even if there's an isra or not on the dirt, and I'm covering it, so now I'm getting the schar mitzvah, that's true. But that's not considered a tangible benefit in which I'm violating the isra or not when I'm using that dirt. Yosef Ravina, we are four lines from the bottom of the Amud. Yosef Ravina, v'kamala l'shmaisa. So Ravina was going over the sugya Eitzve Rechumi l'Ravina. So one of the Amoraim say to Ravina, Rav Rechumi, shofar shel avodas kochavim lo yitaka bo. So we have a brisa. The brisa says that if I have a shofar of avodah zarah, now anything that was used as avodah zarah obviously is asur ba'ana. So the brisa over here says you should not blow it on Rosh Hashanah. Now presumably the answer is, the reason why is because the shofar of avodah zarah is asur ba'ana, and when we're blowing it, we're getting benefit from it, and that's no good. That's presumably the reason. But that can't be because that goes against what Rava just taught us. So my love im takalo yatsa, and the Gemara is now suggesting, isn't that pshan the Braisa? That if I use it on Rosh Hashanah, I'm not yotze? Lo, im taka yatsa. So the Gemara immediately rejects, no, that's not the case. Rather, what the case is that if you use it, you are going to be yotze. It's just that lichatchila, you shouldn't do so. Yep. Now, lichatchila, you shouldn't do so, why not? So the bottom Rashi over here says, because it once upon a time belonged to Avodah Zarah, and it's ma'os, it's pasnish to say the least, to use something that was for avodah zarah, now to use it for a mitzvah, that is inappropriate. It's disgusting, right? Or some synonymous adjective. But when it comes to when I boil it down to, if I use it and I blow, will I be getting credit for the mitzvah? And the answer is yes. And in the context of our Gemara, the reason why, mitzvah lav lanas nitnu, because of Rava's rule. Another example, similar example. Lulav shel avodas kochavim lo yitol, my love imnata lo yatsa. A lulav that once upon a time belonged to avodah zarah. Right, the beginning of the third parak of Sukkah describes the classic scenario of the asherah tree, which is an avodah zarah. So the brisa says that if it was shel avodah zarah, so you shouldn't use it. And presumably imnata lo yatsa. Now the assumption the Gemara is making, same assumption, is that if you do, you're not yotze. And the Gemara says, but that's not correct. Lo imnata lo yatsa. So if you do use it, you're in fact going to be yotze. And again, same point. Lichatchila shouldn't use it because, again, it's inappropriate. Something that was used for avodah zarah, I'm not going to turn around and use it for a mitzvah. It's inappropriate. But in terms of when all is said and done, were you yotze the mitzvah? Yes, you were the yotze the mitzvah. So v'hatan yitaka lo yatsa, nata lo yatsa. Now the Gemara says, but wait 1 second. I do have another brisa, and there is no ambiguity in this brisa. This brisa says that if I blow shofar, you're not yotze. If you take lulav of avodah zarah, you're not yotze. And so here, unlike what we did just a moment earlier, where we explained away those were only lechatchila but not b'di'eved, but here we have the brisa that says unequivocally, not even b'di'eved were you yotze. It doesn't work b'chlal. Amar Rav Ashi. So the Gemara says, okay, I'm not going to reread that brisa. But what we're going to do is we're going to make a basic distinction between the mitzvah of Kisu Adam and these mitzvahs. What's the distinction? Hachi Hashta. Hasam Shi'ura Bi'inan Vavodas Kochavim. Shi'uri Bi'inan Vavodas Kochavim Kitu Demechta Shi'urei. Hacha Koma Demechte Male Lekisui. So the Gemara's distinction goes like this. When it comes to the mitzvah of Shofar, when it comes to the mitzvah of Lulav, so it needs to have a requisite amount. There is a linear measurement necessary for both the shofar and for the lulav. For the shofar, Rashi goes over on the top of the amud, the last Rashi in the parak. For the shofar, So the shofar has to be at least long enough where you're holding it in your hand, and there's some shofar extending from both sides. Shofars we use, obviously, are much larger. But that's the minimum requirement of the shofar, minimum length requirement of a shofar. Similarly, as it comes to the lulav, so this again, we turn to the beginning of the third parak of Sukkah, and we know that the Mishnah there tells us that the hadas and the aravas are three tefachim, and the lulav is four tefachim. The Mishnah doesn't phrase it exactly that way, but that's not the Gemara's understanding of the Mishnah, and the lulav is four tefachim. And when I have something which is a cheftza shel avodah zara, so what happens to the cheftza shel avodah zara? It needs to be pulverized, it needs to be burnt. It needs to be reduced to ashes. And so as a result of that, even if mitzvah lav lahenas nitnu, the reason why the shofar and the lulav won't work is simply because I don't have a shear. There's a requisite shear that I need, and I don't have it based on the principle of ketutim echad shirei. Because of its status of its needing to be burnt, so therefore currently we're going to be looking at it at that status of it is not one whole piece. Ma she'en kein, when it comes to kisu adam, so let's go forward. Let's say that it is going to be burnt. It needs to be burnt. For kisu adam, perfect. That's exactly what we need. In other words, the more reduced it is, the more powdered it becomes, the better it becomes for the mitzvah of kisu adam. So in other words, it's really an external problem. By lulav and by shofar, so vis-a-vis, am I getting hana'ah when I use them? The answer is no. Mitzvah slava hennas didn't know. The problem is that there is a requisite shear, and if I don't have the requisite shear, I simply can't be yotzei to the mitzvah. But when kisu adam, since there is no shear, and in fact just the opposite, the more I reduce it and the more I pulverize it, the better it becomes. So good. Interesting discussion, by the way, off the daf. If I have any chesed shel avodah zara, can I use it for schach? So the so lulav has a requisite shear, and shofar has a requisite shear. What about schach? So, right, in other words, your sukkah needs a covering, but the actual covering itself, does that have to be one organic piece, or can it be made up of particles that to collectively create that shade? Okay, just, I know it's discussed, you'll forgive me, I forgot where exactly the source is, but... Sorry. I'm asking a lot of questions today. Hajjal Lachisu Adam, that is the end of the sixth parak of the Masechta, and this morning we begin the seventh parak. Seventh parak of the Masechta now turns its attention to the topic of Gid HaNasha. Okay, Gid HaNasha, the sciatic nerve. One of the reasons that way it makes this particular parak so popular in the yeshivas, if and when they're deciding to learn Chulin. Right? Rumor has it that this coming year in YU, they're going to be learning Chulin. So the reason why this parak becomes so popular is because a lot of the Tarovitz issues, mixtures of kosher and non-kosher, come up within this parak. And so some of the basic Yoredeya topics of Bittul Barov and Bata B'Shishim and so many of the basic Tarovis issues are coming up in this perek, making this perek wildly popular. The Gid HaNasha itself, the consumption of the sciatic nerve, less popular. The Gid HaNasha is hard nerves of an animal, of a human as well. And basically as the spinal cord now comes to the end of the spinal column, so basically now you have nice, big, chunky pieces of nerve that go over the thigh and run down the leg, and it's designated as the Gid HaNasha. The Gid HaNasha is prohibited, the Torah prohibits it. Where am I going to find the prohibition of the Gid HaNasha? So interestingly enough, there's only one place in the Torah you're going to find the Issur of Gid HaNasha, and it's not what you would expect it. Shmos, Vayikra, Bamidbar, Dvarim, location of the Torah where mitzvahs are recorded. But this mitzvah is recorded in Bereishis, in Parshas Vayishlach. So we're all familiar. So Yaakov goes and wrestles with the Malach, and the Yaakov is winning. And so the Malach with a cheap move, so he hits Yaakov right in the thigh. And Al Kein Lo Yuchlu Bnei Yisrael is Gid HaNasha. And the Torah there says that as a result of that, so Bnei Yisrael are not to eat the Gid HaNasha. You take a look at the Sefer Chinuch on that mitzvah, so he explains beautifully the reason why this mitzvah is necessarily connected to Yaakov Avinu and has to do with the Galus, and see the Sefer Chinuch over there for a wonderful description of why that mitzvah is presented by Yaakov Avinu and in conjunction with the wrestling match. In the meantime, however, our focus today is going to be on, we'll come back, by the way, later to a discussion of the mitzvah of Gid HaNasha coming before Sinai. That's a discussion coming up in our perek. But in the meantime, however, we're just going to deal with straight halacha, as the Mishnah opens up over here with halacha. So if you think about it, there are two back legs to the animal, so that means that there are two sciatic nerves running down the legs of the animal, the right and the left. So when the Torah prohibits to get an asha, is it the right, is it the left, is it both? Everyone can guess where we're headed next. It's machlokas. So that's coming up a little bit later on. Okay? So the and later we're also going to have a more detailed anatomical look at the back of the animal and discuss more accurately and more anatomically what exactly is a Gedan Asha. That too is coming up a little bit later on. In the meantime, however, let's open up with our first Mishnah, the Gedan Asha. No Igbarat V'chutz La'aretz, it applies in and outside of Eretz Yisrael. Again, things we knew, but because of the symmetry and the style of the Mishnah throughout all these Prakim, so the Mishnah opens up over here with the same style that we had previously. B'fnei Abayis Shishlo, B'fnei Abayis, it's not connected at all to the Beis HaMikdash. The Yisrof Gedan Asha applies to non-carbon and carbon animals. Sorry, we're not there yet. Sorry. It applies when there is a Beis HaMikdash and when there's no Beis HaMikdash. B'chulin uve mukdashim. It applies to non-carbon and to carbon animals. Now, this is a change of pace, right? The Isser of Kisur Adam only applied to Chulin, not to Mukdashim, and the Isser of the Mitzvah of Kisur Adam only applied to Chulin, not to Mukdashim. The Isser of Gedan Asha applies to both Chulin and to Karbanos as well. The carbon of the Gedan Asha is prohibited. More of that coming up later. V'nog be'behema v'chaya. It applies to both domesticated and non-domesticated animals. Again, a departure from the Kisu Adam Mitzvah, which is only for Chaya. V'yerech sheyamin u'v'yerech shel small. In our Mishnah, it says it applies both to the sciatic nerve running down the right and the left leg. V'eino nog be'ofim neshein lo kaf. It does not apply to a bird because a bird does not have a thigh. Sounds like from the Gemara that the reason why the Gedan Asha is not prohibited by a bird is because it's missing a anatomical part of the thigh, meaning that it is still considered the sciatic nerve, but its reasons for not being prohibited is because of another feature of the bird. That's a simple reading of the Mishnah. Again, we'll come back to that later on as well. V'nog b'shlil, it also applies to a fetus, meaning the gid hanasha of the fetus is in fact prohibited, according to the Tanakhama. Rav Yehuda omer eino nog b'shlil, and Rav Yehuda says it does not apply to the shlil, meaning the fetus while in utero is just considered an appendage of the mother, and so therefore the sciatic nerve of the fetus inside the mother does not have an independent status of a sciatic nerve. It's just simply considered at that point appendage of the mother. The chalba mutter. Same thing regarding the chalev of the fetus. The chalev of the fetus does not have the status of chalev, again, because according to Rabbi Yehuda, the fetus is just simply but an appendage of the mother, and it does not have its own independent identity. You go to the Shochet, he tells you, I took out the Gedan Asha. Is he to be trusted? So Rav Meir says no, and the Chachamim say, yes, he is to be trusted. And when he tells you that he removed also the fat, right, trebering, right, second time I got to use that word in the Masechta. So when he takes, trebering, by the way, is the removal of the fats and of the Gedan Asha, right, but the Mishnah, the Chachamim say that he is Neman, he is believed when he says so. And let's open up this morning with the Gemara's discussion. And the Gemara's discussion is revolving around the Gemara's point regarding the Gedan Asha of a carbon. Mukdashim Pshita. Mishum de'akta she'epaka le'yisir Gedan Asha gemineh. So the Gemara says, let's take into consideration what just happened. Meaning, we had an animal that wasn't a carbon, and then we sanctified it. We consecrated. We're maktish the animal. Okay. And now when we're maktish the animal now has a new iser attached to it, which is the iser of its kadosh. And if we get any personal benefit from it, we're in violation of me'ilah. Fine. How in the world does that affect the Gedan Asha? The Gedan Asha previously was aser, and we have a general rule throughout Shas, ein iser chalal iser, meaning that it's already aser. And what exactly is there to remove that iser? So really, the question is actually a compound question. Meaning, first and foremost, do you think the iser of Gedan Asha is going to go away? And then on top of that, is there also going to be an iser of Me'ila on top of the Gedan Asha, which certainly didn't go away? Okay, so v'chitem yesh begidim menos in tam v'alsi iser mikdash v'chayla iser gid. So the Gemara over here makes the following suggestion, but to understand the suggestion, so we have to all know one basic piece of information. The gid anashe, is it tasty? So I'm not the right person to ask. I never sat down and ate the gid anashe. Number one, it's aser, and number two, it doesn't seem appetizing, but I don't know. I have no personal experience in eating the gid anashe, and God willing, never. I will not do so. But the gid anashe, however, is aser in the Torah, and it's certainly edible because the Torah prohibits it. So that means that it must be edible. Does it have any taste? Now, I know that's a funny question because taste is something which is subjective. And meanwhile, the Tanaim are going to debate whether or not the gid anashe has tam or does not have tam. Let's go over both of these sides just very quickly. If the gid anashe has taste, so that means to say that it's a food. Maybe I don't consider it appetizing, but again, I can't speak to how good it is or how not good it is. But if you're of the position that gid anashe yesh tam begid, so that means that it does have a taste, and the taste is, again, I know it's a subjective word, but I'm going to use it in the halachic context. It's good, and not only is it good, but if yesh begid menosin tam, that means also that's going to impart its taste into other things. If I'm going to cook the gid anashe with a kosher food, so the taste of the gid anashe is going to now permeate into that kosher food, and it's going to render it non-kosher, unless you have the ratios. That's coming up later in the perek. So that's one position. And there's another position of ein begid menosin tam. Now this position is super interesting. Number one, it's hard to explain the machlokas. What does that mean, the gid doesn't have taste? We're like judging some sort of cooking show? We're like, oh, it tastes good. No, it doesn't taste good. So it is hard to articulate and explain this position altogether, that there's no taste to the gid anashe. But what it means, if you subscribe to the rule of ain begin a menosin tam, it means a couple of things. It means, number one, that despite the fact that it doesn't have taste, still the Torah prohibits it. Meaning, does it taste good? No. Can I eat it? No. The Torah prohibits it. A second thing it means, if that ain begin a menosin tam, if I took the gid anashe and cooked it with other food, as long as I remove the gid anashe, you're good. What about the taste that the gid anashe imparted into the other food? Ain begin a menosin tam. There's no taste in the gid anashe, and so therefore it doesn't impart to others. So I'm admittedly at a shortfall in terms of explaining the machlokas, but there is a machlokas, that's very clear, of whether there is taste in the gid anashe or there's no taste in the gid anashe. And the Gemara now analyzes our question from the following perspective. Let's assume that a gid anashe has taste. Okay, let's assume that. So now what? So now we are able to make the following argument. I'm going to read the Gemara again. So let's say that there's taste in the gid anashe, and that would allow for the iser hektish to come on top of the iser gid. Now, how can that be? Rashi over here explains. Rashi writes, that means to say now that if you're going to eat the gid anashe of a carbon, you're going to be subject to two sets of malchus. Achas mishum gid shafilu eitz hu hatorah chayva alav. So, number one, the gid anashe. You're going to get malchus for the gid anashe, and that has nothing to do with taste. That's just simply because it is the gid anashe and the Torah prohibits it. And then, assuming the gid anashe has taste, then on top of that, you're going to get a second set of malchus. Rashi explains why. Mishum mukdashim sheish potam. V'nene minam mukdashim. Because if it's tasteful, so then you just got benefit. Getting benefit from mukdashin, from a karban, that's the iser of me'ila. V'shamina mine tarte. So over here now, there are two points to be learned. Chada diyesh begin menosin tam v'chada diyesh chalal iser. So that means that there is taste in the gid anashe, and two, we can have one iser overlay on top of another iser. Both of those are chidushim. And so the Gemara says, maybe that's the point of the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, back to the Gemara, Hai mukdashim noeg begin mi baile. If that's really what the Mishnah wanted to teach us, the wording of the Mishnah should have read, and the Isser Hektesh, or let's now call it, the Isser Me'ila, is going to go on top of the Isser Gid. The Isser Gid comes first, the Isser Me'ila comes second. And that should be the wording of the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, Elka savrein begin menosin tam mukdashim Isser Gid, ika Isser mukdashim laika. So the Gemara says, okay, so you know what? I'm going to suggest the following pshat in the Mishnah, but we're going to now go in the other direction. We're going to assume now that our Mishnah is of the opinion that ain begidim and no sin tam, there's no taste in the gid anashe. And what we're going to say is as follows. When I have an animal, and I'm makdish the animal, So there is no Issa Me'ila on the Gedanasha. Why? Because it's tasteless. Aye, but there is the Issa of the Gedanasha because there's the Issa of Gedanasha. That's the pshat in the Mishnah. So in other words, so now as you look back at the Mishnah, you read the Mishnah, here's what the Mishnah is saying. The Mishnah is saying, Bechulin uve mukdashin, that the Issa of Gedanasha is by a karban, meaning the only Issa of the karban regarding the Gedanasha is the Issa Gedanasha and not the Issa Hana, because our Mishnah subscribes to the viewpoint of Ein Begin Beno Sein Tam. So the Gemara says, but it's just not, it's not accurate. What's not accurate? We know, based on other Mishnayos, that our Mishnah holds Yesh Begin Beno Sein Tam. The Gemara says, well, let's consider the Mishnah that we're going to be learning a little bit later on. If I have the thigh, which is the muscle, the meat of the animal, being cooked with the Gedanasha, if the ratio between the two is such that the Gedanasha is imparting taste into the meat, so the meat is asur. That's a Mishnah coming up in our parak. What is that Mishnah teaching us? That the Gedanasha, according to our Mishnayos, has taste. We assume that our Mishnah is in coordination with that Mishnah, and we therefore assume that the Mishnayos hold that there is taste in the Gedanasha. Elahacha, so the Gemara now is going to have to explain. And so what the Gemara is about to do, and we're going to leave this for tomorrow morning, what the Gemara is about to do is give us a scenario in which our Mishnah actually is in fact describing how there could be the Isser of the Gedanasha in a karban. Meaning we have to circumvent the issue of Yesh Begin Beno Sein Tam, which is not an issue, meaning we've just proven that our Mishnahs hold that there is taste in the Gedanasha. So then, if that's true, there is the Isser of Gedanasha. On top of it is the Isser of Hana'a of Me'ila. But we also have the rule of Ein Isser Chalal Isser. So we have some explaining to do. So we're going to continue tomorrow morning along this track.